confession or can send his way and kiss it, that's okay.
Yeah,
no, no objections to that. Okay.
So
if it rains in Tavis, it's also good.
Okay.
Fact is that Eretz Yisrael needs rain, period.
There.
That's all there is to it.
Right.
And I noticed that the last few weeks they've had quite a bit of rain in Eretz Yisrael.
So
thank
good.
God. Yeah. 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 So I'm always happy when I see it in the newspaper. You know, I follow the daily weather report from Jerusalem to see what's doing over there. So, at any rate, so what Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, if you have 7 days of consecutive rain, it's as if the first, second, and third rain have already fallen. Okay? Come on. Now, whose opinion would this tally with? So their answer is Rabbi Yossi, like Rabbi Yossi's opinion. Omer Rabbi Chista, and Rabbi Chista said, Halocha Rabbi Yossi. So, now they say, Bishlamo Ravi Rishaino Lishol. Okay, we can understand, he says, that the first rain, this is the time to do what? To begin to pray for rain. In other words, when do you start in to pray Masha Haroch? Excuse me, when do you start in to say Talamotar? When the first rain falls, or the time when the first rain should be falling, which is, as we said, either the third of Cheshvan or the seventh of Cheshvan. Right, okay? Shlishis, we can understand what the purpose of the third rain is, because if it fails to rain, then in that case, lehisanois, then is the time to begin fasting. But shni olamai, what is the purpose of the second rain? Why do you have to have first rain, second rain, and third rain? The first and the third we can understand, but why the second rain? Some are abzeras, so abzeras said, linidorim, we need this for those who make a neder. I'll explain that in a second. Ditnan, as the Mishnah says, okay, it's the Mishnah in the Dorm, alright? And it says over there that hanoder ad hageshomim, if a person takes a vow, okay, you have to understand, what is a neder? Neder is a vow that a person takes, okay? Now, the kind of neder that we're talking about over here is what we call nidrei hanoa, which means vows taken wherein you say that you're not going to enjoy or you're not going to take advantage of something or other. You could do it either for yourself, or you could say that I don't want to have anything to do with, let's say, that person's whatever it may be, or something like that.
To do without.
To do without, exactly. If a person says, for example, I make a vow that I'm not going to eat any chocolate. Okay? And he says, I'm not going to eat any chocolate ad hoc shalom, until the rain falls. Okay? So in that particular case, Mishayordu Geshomim, right? So, Ad Hakshomim, right? So, Shemayordu Geshomim, when rain begins falling, Ad Shateridu via Shania.
Is the Nader over at that point then?
Yeah, let me say, Hanodu Alakshomim. It says, a person takes a vow and he says, Ad Hakshomim. In other words, I take a vow until the time that the rain falls. When the rain falls, then at that point my neder is finished, right? So it says, Mishayerdu Geshomim, if he says that, the reason is there's a little confusion in the text over here, as the note on the side over there indicates over there. Okay? So, the point is that when the rains begin falling, it's not really with the first rain, but if he says, Ad Shatera Deviya Shnia, when the second rain falls, so then this marks the end of his having to do it. But actually, the Gemara in the Dorm over there says he'd have to be very careful as to what the language is. If a person says, you know, Ad in the sense of only up to, then in that particular case, you have to understand what does he have in mind, okay? If it means only up to, but from the moment that the rain falls, then that would be the end of it. But if he says until rains fall, then it has to be more than one rain, exactly. It would have to be also the first rain and the second rain. So then when the second rain begins falling, at that particular point he is released from his vow. Okay, from his neder.
Now
yes.
I'm a little confused.
Yeah.
We know your wrath is in Heshbon, and Malkosh is in
Nisan, we said. Okay. Right.
Fine. Now, we also know that in Mar Heshbon, there's a first, second, and third rain.
Right.
So when they're talking to the Nidareen, the second rain is the second rain of your wrath.
Right, right. Okay. Right. Exactly, yeah. Rab Zvid Omar Lezaysen, he uses the second rain as a time for the harvest of olives. Ditnan, as we learned, is a Mishnah in Shvius, which says as follows. Alright, you have to understand with Shvius, you know, this year right now is the seventh year in Eretz Israel. The law in the Torah is concerning Shvius, not only, you know, that you're not allowed to do any agricultural labor during this year, but you're also not allowed to sell the fruits, you know, and make any profit on
not
them either.
Born
can't,
during
right.
that year.
Right. Because if it took root, you know, prior to Rosh Hashanah, then in that case it's still permitted. But if it first takes root, you know, during the seventh year, then it would be prohibited. Okay? There are all kinds of complications, I don't have to tell you.
Yeah.
Not only that, but we have another complication, and that complication is that we have what we call sefiach. Sefiach means aftergrowth. In other words, after you've harvested something, then there still is a residue. And that in itself, you know, could grow. Now the sefiach also, you're not allowed to consume, you know, to sell, to, I don't mean consume, but I mean it's not allowed to buy or sell Sophia, it's free for all. And at the same time, there's also a law concerning your animals, that as long as there is food in the fields for the animals, then you can keep it in the house for
keep
yourself.
House.
Keep food in the house for yourself, right? In other words, fruits and stuff. But once there's no more food for the animals to eat in the field, then it says that you have to take it out of your home and give it to the animals.
Before, in deference to the person himself. In other words, the animal comes first.
Yep. If you take a look again, since we're quoting the second paragraph of the Shema Yisrael, right? It says, "When asati esav esadcha v'hemtecha, v'yachalta v'savota." So we see over there too that they're concerned that the animals should also have what to eat. And to a certain extent, you know, it's like a priority given. Take care of these poor behemoths, you know, and then take care of your own needs and so on. So these are some of the complications. So the Mishnah over there says, "May Mosai kol odom matorim beleket v'shichu v'feyo." So, first of all, when is any person permitted to go and gather the leket, shichu, and feyo? Remember, leket is in the time when they glean, you know, they cut the sheaves. If a sheaf drops down, that's leket, right? Shikha, you put down a sheaf, and then you forgot to come and pick it up, okay? So, naturally, leket and shikha, they belong to the poor people, okay? And peya, a corner of the field has to be left standing for them, at least. It would be 260ths or 60th of the field has to be left for the poor. That's a minimum. But frankly, if you have a lot of property and so on, you have to give much more for the poor people, okay? So that has to be left for the poor people. But during Shvius, when, you know, the field presumably is free for all, right? So when can the average person come and take? So, first you have to let the poor people, they still have their rights first, okay? Like a chikopeya. So, you give them first chance. So it's mishayelchu hanemushos, right? So, it's from the time that the nemushos, literally the weak people, they've gone. Beferet uva elelos. And when it comes to peritonitis, this has to deal with grapes. Perit, they explain that you have individual grapes instead of being in a cluster, but simply individual and so on.
I buried.
Right. And oilolois are like the not ripened fruit yet, okay, or the immature fruit, or the not fully grown fruit, all right, these are the oilolois. So these again, they belong to whom? To the poor.
Poor.
So with them, it's also Mishayelcho Aniyim Bekerem V'yavo. From the time that the poor people go into the vineyard, and then, you know, they return after having harvested whatever they could find. Then, you know, in other words, once they've gone through the field, at that point, then anybody else can come and get, all right? Bezesim, how about with olives? So, Mishatei Reid Revi'o, from the time that the second rainfall begins, at which time the presumption is that if the olives stay on the tree after the time that the second rain begins falling, then they're going to spoil. So that rather than let them spoil, at this point, you know, they're free for all. Everybody can come and take them. Okay? My nemushos. Now, what do we mean by the word nemushos? So, Omar, which we, you know, we said, I had translated being like elderly people, but they'll give it an interpretation now. My nemushos, what do we mean by nemushos? Omar, Rabbi Yochanan, sobe da azle atigra. He says, these are elderly people who have to walk upon a cane. In other words, they need a cane in order to walk with. They cannot go on their own 2 feet. So, they have to get a priority before you know, the people can then come and harvest whatever is left over there. Reish Lakish Omar, Lukute Bosa Lukute. He says that the Nemushos, that means those who are gathering after the first gatherers have gone. In other words, first they gather, then another group comes in to gather, and by that time, after that, then you're free to go after two other groups have gone. This is how he explains the word the bush.
What does Reish Lakish mean?
Reish Lakish is Shimon ben Lakish.
Okay,
yeah,
I heard that.
But they called him Reish Lakish because of the fact that he was literally a head of people. Now, what do I mean by a head? He's a very important person. No, he's a very important person. But there's a very famous Gemara that says something about Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish, to begin with, was a bandit, actually. He was a real bandit, yeah. And then Rabbi Yochanan converted him. He got him to become religious. Right. And Reish Lakish said he would do it on condition that he married Rabbi Yochanan's daughter. So Rabbi Yochanan consented to that. And Reish Lakish changed his entire way of life and became a Baal Tshuva and became a great scholar. So then the Gemara says that one time he complained to Rabbi Yochanan. He said, look, when I was the head of a gang, the chief of the gangsters, you know, so they called me Reisha, they called me the head. Yeah. And now that I'm a scholar, he says, they still give me the title the head. So what have I gained, you know, by becoming the head of scholars as compared to the head of gangsters? Of course, he didn't mean it seriously, but
no.
The point is,
what did Robert Yochanan answer?
Yeah. He didn't give him an answer. It was obvious that his new way of life was better. Besides, Rabbi Yochanan said, look, you got my daughter. That's the difference.
I heard that name
before. Rabba, Rabba.
Yeah. No, he's quoted in loads of tides in the Gemara. Right, Reish Lakish. Yeah, very famous. Right. But his real name was Shimon. Shimon ben Lakish.
Shimon ben Lakish.
Right, yeah. So Reish Lakish Omar, yeah, Lukuti Basa Lukuti. Rapapa Omar. Papa said, "Kidei lahaleich b'shvilei harishus." He says, "When the second rain comes, this is the time when you have permission to now walk in private paths." The Omamar, as you know, a scholar said, "Mahalchin kol odom b'shvilei harishus," that people are permitted to walk in the private paths until the time the second rain falls. Let me explain that. I didn't quite explain it correctly. Again, he wants to know, what is the second rainfall, you know, what is the purpose of it? And we saw different suggestions as to what it is. For Nedorim, right? Or to give us a certain time, let's say, for the gathering of olives, at which point can everybody come into the field and start to pick olives, because otherwise it would spoil.
Wow.
So he gives another one. Normally, people can walk, let's say, if it's the summertime, okay? So you would be permitted to walk on private paths that are between, you know, where it's surrounded by beds of produce and things like that, okay? But once the second rain starts, it's going to fructify the seeds that have been planted in the ground, because the rain will make it fruitful, you know, for the future. But what happens if you go and you trample upon it because there are seeds underneath? Then you ruin it so that there won't be. So that, therefore, this is the time, he says, that you're no longer permitted to go in private paths, but you have to stick instead to the public ways. Okay?
Which is called...
Right. Yeah. If you want, you know, the... call it the Rishus HaRabim.
Rishus HaRabim.
Right. Public domain. Rav Nachman by Yitzchok, Rav Nachman Yitzchok, Omar, he says that the purpose of the second rain is Levayer Pero Shaviz. It's in order to tell us that you have to remove the fruits that have grown, you know, during the seventh year from your home. Ditnan, as we learned, Ad Mosai Nehenin V'Sofin B'Tevin V'Kasho Shaviz. Until what point can we... can we have use and burn the straw and the stubble that grows in the seventh year? Remember what I said before about aftergrowth and so on. In other words, it's not just fruit and grain and so on that are affected, but even anything that grows in the ground, you're not allowed to use it for private purposes. That's the point. So even to burn it in order, let's say, to have like kindling or something like that, you're not allowed to do it, that. Right? So the answer is, you know, archeteri levia shenia, until the point that you know, the second rain falls. My tama, what is the reason? Dichsiv, it's written in the Torah, v'liv hemtecho, it is to be for your cattle, v'lachayo, and for your untamed bees, your, you know, not domesticated bees, asher be'artzecha, there are in your land. Calls man shechayu cheles pasode, as long as the wild beasts find food to eat in the field, ha chelav hem techor, then you can also give it to your cattle. In other words, you can feed them from what you have in your home. But kol ol chayu min asode, from the point that the wild animals no longer have any food that they could find in plenty, then then you have to take out the food from your house that you stored up so that your cattle can enjoy. In other words, you can no longer you know, keep it in the house, but you have to give it to them so that they also have something to eat. Well, I'll do a couple of more lines and we'll call it a day because my throat is very tired tonight. Says my Loshim Revia, what is the meaning of the word Revia? So he answers, Dova Sharovea is Hakarko. It is something which, I'll explain it to you, it is Rovea, the soil. All right, now the question is, what does Rovea mean? The answer is that the word Rovea in Hebrew implies like sexual intercourse. But let me explain. We have it, for example, you know, where we have it in Sefer Vayikra, among prohibited things, that you're not allowed, for example, to have intercourse with an animal, you know, what they call bestiality, okay? And the expression is l'riva, tevelhu. This is, you know, it's an abomination, so on, okay? So the rain, it's as though it is performing the act of, let's say, a husband to the soil, which is like the wife. You understand? And that's why it is called Revia. Mm-hmm. Okay? Get a Rav Yehuda, as Rav Yehuda said, Amar Rav Yehuda, he says, Mitra, the rain, he says, is Balo de Arahu, is the husband of the soil. Shenemar, and the pasuk that he bases it upon is the fact, is the pasuk in Yeshayo, Ki kasher yered hageshem asherek ben hashemayim, because just as the rain and the snow descend from heaven, the Shoma lo Yeshuv, and they will not return over there. Kiyim hirva esoros, except that they saturate the earth, the holy da, and they cause it to give birth, the hitzmicha, and you know, and to bring forth all kinds of plants. So, in other words, the soil benefits from the rain just as a wife, you know, benefits from her husband. And this is why it's called Revia, that it is holy dor the hitzmicha. It causes the earth, literally, to bear its produce, right, and bring forth the vegetation. The Yom Rabbi Abohu, Rabbi Abohu said, Revia Rishona, what is the first rain there for? It's Kadesh Ateret Bekarka Tefach. It's in order to moisten and to enter the soil a tefach. A tefach is a hand's breadth. In other words, the first rain will produce a certain amount of saturation, but, you know, not complete, only, let's say, about a hand breadth of the rain. Sheniyo, but the second one is Kedelo Guf Bo Pi Chovitz. It's in order to, you know, to moisten the soil to such an extent that, for example, you could take the soil and use it in order to take a cask and make a stopper for it. In those days, how did they seal a cask?
Use a corn cob.
Huh?
A corn cob.
Corn cob. No, they didn't use corn cobs for that. They sealed casks by sort of like putting mud and then baking it on. But naturally, the mud has to have, you know, a certain hardness, a certain consistency. Because if it's simply slime, you know, it's garnished, right? But we're talking about so that the rain at this point has affected the soil in such a way that they could use it in order to stop up the cask of wine so that there shouldn't be any evaporation. So, anyway, yes, Rav Chisda said, Gishomim, if the rain Sheyorda has fallen, Kedelo Gufa en Pichovis, so that you could use the soil in order to stop up, you know, the mouth of a cask, so Ein Bohen Mishum VeOtzar. Then it means that God has blessed the land with enough rain so that it no longer, the idea of Yotzar HaShemayim, you know, when the Pasuk says that God will shut up the heaven, there will no below Yemotor, this is no longer in effect. In other words, it shows that God has blessed us by giving us enough rain. Well, I think I'm going to stop at this point.
Okay.
And Yotzar Hashem, we shall continue. We've covered quite a bit of ground tonight.
Oh, we're now on.
Yeah, we're now on Dab Bav Amud Beis. Approximately in the middle of the page right now.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Are you milking or fleishig?
I'm parv. I mean fleishig. What am I talking about?
Fleishig.
What is this? This huh?
It is parv. No sugar in there.
No, there's definitely sugar.
Because I have
one. There is sugar in this.
These are all. Of course there is, but because it won't. You know, it's not going to spoil.
These are fleishig candies, but they're
milking. I can't have had fleishig before. Thank you very much.
It's parv.
Very good. Okay, so Mirza Hashem, we shall meet next week and continue, and we're moving along. We're going very nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
We are now on where?
We are now on Dabbab, Amud Beis.
Amud Beis, okay.
The fourth long line on the page.
Fourth line?
Three. Long line.
Long line.
Long line,
okay.
On the page. Okay?
Yep.
All right. Second word, the Omar Rabbi Abu. We did these couple of words last week at the very end, but I'm reviewing it simply because of the fact that it ties in, you know, with my father. So the Omar Rabbi Abu, who's a Rabbi Abu, said, "Revia Rishona." Remember, we learned that there were three rain falls in Eretz Israel. Okay, first rain, which they call over here the Revia Rishona. Then there's Revia Shnia, which comes just a few days later. Okay. And then via Shlishis, okay? So these three rains, we learned at the top of the page, on the bottom of the previous page, why these three rains. Now, by the way, we're still talking, you know, about the Yorah. We're not talking about the Malkosh over here, okay? Because we're talking primarily about the rains that fall in the month of Cheshvan, and maybe up to the beginning of Kislev itself. Okay?
Spring rains.
Huh?
Spring rains.
No, these are really the fall rains.
Really fall
rains. Spring rains are different. That's the Malkosh.
Malkosh, okay.
Right. Although there are differences of opinion, but that's generally what the discussion led to last time. Okay? But there are three periods of rain, even in the former rain. In other words, it's usually like a little break, and then another rain comes, and then a break, and then another rain comes. Okay? Mm-hmm. So the question is, what is the purpose of the first rain? What is the purpose of the second rain? Okay? And the third rain, we know. The third rain, obviously, it's the, you know, to increase the fertility, etc., etc. The second rain is in reference to vows we learned. This is what we learned at the top of the page. If you take a vow, for example, that you're not going to eat this and this food until until rains fall, then since Geshomim is plural, so it's not up to
rain.
The first rain, but it's up to the time when the second rain begins, at which time you're automatically freed from the vow. Okay? And then we learned also that there's another possibility, namely that after the second rain, things are going to begin spoiling in the fields, and so we learned that in connection with like leket, peyah, shekha, and things like that, or with olives, that they're permitted already to anybody could go into the fields and pick, lest they run away in the fields over there. So it becomes free for all at that particular point. Okay, all right. So going down now to where we are, we learned that the Omer Rabbo has said that Raviyah Rishona. What is the purpose of the first rain? So it says, Kadesh Tirid B'Karka Teva. It's in order that it should go into the ground, the measure of a Teva. Teva is a hand breadth. So in other words, it gives a soaking to, the first few inches of the ground. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then he says,
yeah.
Let's see, where's the place?
The second one
he says Kedei Loguf for Pichavis. Remember that you can make enough mud out of it, so to speak, that when it hardens it forms like a stopper for a cask that contains wine or oil or something like that. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And Omarat Chisok, in other words, prior to that it doesn't have enough consistency. But now it has enough consistency, but presumably too, because of the consistency, it indicates that the ground has been soaked even more and it's ready, it can hold the water, you see.
Okay.
No.
So they made casks for wine there, is that what they made the casks for?
No, but they made
stoppers.
Oh, stoppers.
Right. To put a, like a cork.
A cork.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Except that they didn't use a cork. So they used this in order to seal it, so to speak. Until they had a breakthrough in order to to get out of the right.
Seal with wax or something
right. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, it's the
Omer Rav Chisda.
Yeah. All right. Now, and then Omer Rav Chisda, said that Yishamim sheyorda kedei loga behem pi chovitz sein behem mishemotza. He says that if it has rained enough, hard enough, so that you could use now the soil, which is moisture soaked by the rain, in order to seal up the cask, as we have said, then it means that we no longer have to worry about the curse that we have in the Shema Yisrael, where it says v'yotzo es shemayim. That if the people of Israel sin, right? The Chorav had Hashem Lachem, right? The Yosaz Hashemayim, and God will become angry with you, and He will shut up the heaven, and there will not be any rain.
Second paragraph.
Right. So the result is that if we see that it's wet enough, then we know that we don't have to fear that God is going to shut up the rain, right? That there'll be it's already providing a sufficient rainfall for the year. Okay. Omar Abaye. Right. Another statement that he made was that Kishom Mishayodah Kodem the Otsar, He says that if it rains before you get to saying the second paragraph of the Shema, then again you don't have to worry that the curse of the Otsar Sashamayim will be carried out.
I understand what he means by that.
Okay, what he means is you're saying Krishna.
Yeah.
Okay? And all of a sudden, before you get to that point in the second paragraph of the Krishna, you know, where it says, what's our Shemayim? You see that it's raining, so that's a simon already that there will not be a curse. However, as we'll see, there's a question now that they raise. Abaye, Omar Abaye, so Abaye said, Le'am Moron, he says, Elo Kodem V'yotza De'urta. He says, this applies only if we're reading the evening Krishna. In other words, if rain starts to fall in the evening, then that's a good sign. That's a sign that, you know, there will not be any scarcity of rain. Abol kodem v'otza d'tzafro, but if the rain begins falling before the shachris Krishna, before the, you know, before we say v'otzar in the morning, in shachris, so yesh b'hem mishum v'otzar, then you can still have this possibility that, you know, that
the curse still exists.
The curse of the Otsar will be carried out. The Omar Rabbi Yehuda Bar Yitzchok, as Rabbi Yehuda Bar Yitzchok said, and this we had towards the last chapter of Brachas, where they quoted it also. It says, Hanei Anone de Tzafro, Les Behu Mishosha. It says, if we see clouds in the morning, then they have no substance to them. So I explained to you, in Eretz Yisrael, very often you wake up and you see that the sky is cloudy. And then, and you think, oh, maybe we're going to see rain. Doesn't. As it gets sunny later in the day, so the clouds disappear. Mm. Then at nightfall, and again, clouds form. So that the result is that clouds in the morning do not necessarily indicate that there's going to be any rain. So this is what he's pointing out. And this is, and we have a pasuk to show this. The pasuk taken from the prophet Hosea, where he says, Mo'es elechol Ephraim, Mo'es elechol Yehuda. He says, what can I do unto you, O Ephraim? What can I do unto you, O Yehuda? Of course, Ephraim, Yehuda over here mean the two kingdoms of the Jewish people. Yeah. Because Hosea lived during the time when the nation of Israel, you know, was split into two different
kingdoms. There was a kingdom Yehuda, but was there a kingdom Ephraim too?
Oh, sure. What he calls Ephraim is what they call also Malchus Yisrael, Kingdom of Israel. And the capital from the time of King Omri on, who made the capital city of Shomron, that remained the capital of the Kingdom of Ephraim right until the time that the Assyrians, Asher, destroyed it and took captive the people of Israel.
So the capital of Yehuda was then
Yerushalayim. Right, exactly. Yeah.
Well, there's northern capital and a southern capital, right, of Israel at one time?
Northern.
Well, Judah and you had a northern kingdom, you had a southern kingdom.
It was called Judah and Israel. Huh?
Judah and Israel, the two most common names, but very often the kingdom of Israel is referred to as also Ephraim.
Okay.
Because Ephraim was the principal tribe
of that,
that
area.
Made up that.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Was that the northern kingdom?
That was the northern kingdom.
Yeah. And prophets, Hosea happened to prophesy primarily to Ephraim, but also to Yehuda. Same thing with Amos. Amos also. He came from Yehuda, but he prophesied primarily in Ephraim and so on. So that they would go sort of back and forth, you know. And later, of course, once the kingdom of Israel was destroyed by the Assyrians, then all that you had left, of course, was the kingdom of Yehuda.
Now, the Assyrians, are they the same Assyrians, or is it a different tribe altogether?
The name Assyrian is, in the Hebrew, is Ashur.
Ashur.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And what's the name of the Syrians?
The name of the Syrians, which is a name that we do not find in our Bible, but in those days they were called Aram. Aram Naharaim, and Aram, exactly. Actually, there were two areas of Aram. One is Aram Naharaim, the other one is called Aram.
But it was adjacent to Syria, huh? Assyria was adjacent to Syria?
No, Assyria was further away.
It was further away.
Away, right, more to the northeast.
Where Iran is, or Iraq?
Well, Iraq is where
Babel, yeah.
Babel was, exactly. Yeah. Right. Iran is where Persia was.
Persia.
Okay. Assyria was sort of south of Persia.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. But it was one of the first world empires.
Very powerful tribe.
Right, because Ashur, you know, had tremendous armies. And the result was that they conquered all that area. And then eventually they were conquered in turn by Babel, by Babylonia. And then, of course, after the 70 years or so, you know.
But Aram never was as big as those two.
No. No. But it was a powerful kingdom, too.
Yeah.
And at times,
well,
they would defeat the kingdom of Israel when battle was raging between the two. Sometimes they engaged in a union with Yisrael against Yehuda. This we find at the beginning of Sefer Yeshayahu, where he has a prophecy saying that the king of Judah should not be afraid of the conspiracy between the king of Aram and the king of
Ephraim. Ephraim.
Right. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So,
I've always heard that word Assyria, you know, and I didn't know
that
meant.
That's only because, you know, the names that we have are based, unfortunately, upon the Greek Bible, and as transmitted subsequently in the Latin Bible. So, if they didn't bother to call it Assyria, if they called it by its biblical name that we know it by, Ashur, then in that particular case, you wouldn't have made the confusion between
that. Right.
And if they had called Aram Aram all the time, the way the Bible does, then again. But you know, when you translate Aram and you translate it Assyria, so it gives a false concept. True.
Different that sounds. Yeah.
You know, Assyria eventually became that part which belonged to Aram once upon a time. The capital of Aram was Damascus.
Yeah.
So when this is a wandering Aramean with my father, they were talking about Aram, Syria?
Yes. The only thing is that there are those who say that why do they call him Arami? Remember the reference is to Yaakov when it says. So the answer is because he had to flee there in order to escape the vengeance of his brother Esau. So he settled over there and he was there for 20 years, if you remember. So that's why it says Arami Obedovi. But of course, when it came to the time in the Medrash, so then they already give a new interpretation. They say Arami Obed means that Laban of Arami wanted to destroy Yaakov, you know, might be. So, but you know, there's a difference between what we call Pshat, meaning the
text.
Yeah, the most likely or the most simple explanation, as compared to Drash, which means that you know, it's there for interpretation. Exactly. All right. So getting back over here, so the prophet Hosea says, "What can I do unto you, Ephraim? What can I do unto you, Yehuda? Or what can I do for you, either one? V'chastachem kanan boker, inasmuch as your loving kindness, literally, is only like a morning cloud." In other words, the prophet is saying to both kingdoms that whatever good actions you do is only superficial and only lasts in the morning and dissipates afterwards. So therefore, on this basis, you see, so we see that Rabbi Yehuda Bar Yitzchak said that you know, the morning clouds
really
do not
count.
Right, they don't mean very much. Omalei Rav Papa L'Abaye. So Rav Papa said to Abaye, he says, "V'ho Amrei Inche." Don't people say the following? You know, it's a proverbial expression. This we had also in Brachas, by the way. This little selection we had in the last chapter of Brachas. What do they say? He says, "Miftach bove mitra." If at the time that you open up the gates, there's rain. In other words, when you open the door, rain is falling. Bar Chamro, he says, then Mr. Donkey Driver, Buch Sakho, you might as well put down your bag, the Gane, and go and take a nap again. Take it easy, because you're not going to go out and make any money, because
the rain is going
to bring prosperity to everyone, which means that the price of the food that you were going to carry, is going to go down, so it doesn't pay for you to go out of doors because you're only going to lose money as a result. I guess he might have answered that yeah, but look at the turnover that the Gemara doesn't mention. Okay. All right, so what is the point of this? The point of this is simply the fact that, hey, if it rains in the morning, it could be a blessing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And here we said that if you see clouds in the morning or rain in the morning, doesn't mean anything, right? So he says, Lo Kashri, he says, no, there's no difficulty between reconciling the two different examples. Ho de Kotev Yivo, Ho de Kotev Anoni says, if the cloud is, that is, if the sky is covered over with Yivo, Yivo is a thick cloud, then in that case, this would be a bracha. It's a bracha, because it means that it's going to be a good soaking rain. But Ho de Kotev Anoni, if the sky is only clouded, is only covered over with light clouds, then it means that the rain isn't going to amount to anything.
So already we have a distinction for morning clouds.
Right.
Two different kinds of clouds.
Yes, exactly. Omer Rav Yehuda, Rav Yehuda said, Tova l'shata d'teva samalta. He says, it's good for the year. In other words, the year is going to be blessed when Teves is a widow. Now, what does it mean when Teves is a widow? So, we have to understand. Remember that we had up above, also higher up on this page, they compare the rain that God sends, right, as if it were the bridegroom.
Yes.
Right?
And the earth
is like the collar. Okay?
The collar.
Right. All right. So, if that's the case, what he's saying is that if the earth, the collar, okay, has no rain during Teves, that's good for the year. Why is it good for the year? Because it's rained prior to Teves. And then it gives an opportunity for, let's say, the seeds
to grow,
to germinate, to grow, and so forth. So that it means that it will bring on a year of plenty as a result. So now again, there's a question about that. Ikudi Amri, there are those who say, the lo bayere tarbitze, the Ikudi Amri le shokul shudofna. There are those who interpret it in the sense that the lo bayere tarbitze, which means that the fields will not go to waste. This, I have to tell you, is Rashi's second interpretation. We'll take a look at his two interpretations. The Yukad Yamri, and there are those who say, the Lo Shokel Shudofta. Shudofta, or Shidofon in Hebrew, this they translate by blast, which means it's a disease that hits the plants and so on, okay? So, the point
light,
is.
Light.
That
light.
Light. Light. Okay, good.
Light.
Thanks, Oscar.
Yeah, all right. So if you have, I'm translating according to the old official translation that we find in the King James translation, you know, the word shidofon, right? Yeah, blast and mildew and so on, right? Okay, so the other interpretation is then that if the month of Teves is dry, it doesn't rain, then it also means then that this blight will not occur in the fields. The plants will not be affected. Okay? Eini? Isn't this so? The Omar Rav Chisda, didn't Rav Chisda say that Tova l'shato de Tevis nivalto, that the year is fortunate in which Tevis is going to be all dirtied up, all muddied up, so to speak? In other words, a rainy Tevis, the implication would be that it would be good for the year. And here we said that a dry Tevis is good for the year. So he says, Lo kasha. No difficulty, he says. Ha de osa mitra miyakara. Ha de le osa mitra miyakara. When is a dry Tevis good? This is when rain has fallen to begin with. In other words, rain was there before the month of Tevis. It was already raining. So in that case, it's good for the earth to have a chance to rest up a little bit and dry up a little in between, okay? But where is the muddy Tevis good? The answer is, if you didn't have rain beforehand, it rains now, so at least you're getting rain. All right, I said that Rashi has two translations over here. he says Tova Lushat over there. He says Ashrei Klomer Tova Yesh Lashodor the Teres Amato Shem Shem Yodin Bo Laharbiya Esorosil to moisten the ground. He says Igad Elmi Doi Bairi Tabise. This is the, you know, there are those who say that it is not Bairi Tabise. Now Tabise we know means fields or gardens or something like that. Okay, but and the question is, what is the meaning of Bayere? So this is where Rashi gives two different interpretations. He says, Osan Mekomos. He says those places, Shema Bitzim Behen Torah, where they spread Torah over there, the Harbitz Torah became an expression, which means, you know, literally that you're cultivating Torah. All right. So in those areas where they cultivate Torah, Einon Boros, then there are not going to be any pits in the ground, b'nei shadrochim yofenhein, because that way the roads are good. Behol chinatalmidim imokim imokim ilmot Torah, and when the roads are good, because you know Tavis is dry, so then people can go from place to place in order to learn Torah. This is his first interpretation. Then lamed aleph, which means lishnach rino, another interpretation. He says the bairi tabitza. He says ganos. The gardens or the fields she'inon gedelin or rov mayim that cannot produce great crops if there is too much water, because sometimes crops are affected by too much water. And he gives an example of kagon karshin, and he says, for example,